There's a lot to say when buying a new home or car, but only one thing to say that can help you protect them. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. And just like that, a State Farm agent will be there to help you choose the coverage you need, no matter where you are in life. When you need coverage options, your State Farm agent is there to help, on the phone or in person. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Sound or?
No, this is a good room with very little distraction. Yeah, I think that sounds pretty good.
Nice. Not echoey.
I think that sounded pretty good. And the other good thing is that the windows are covered, so we're not getting that glass. Sometimes I'll record in the conference rooms, and then I get comments. Are you in a warehouse?
Nice.
Like, thank you. Please continue enjoying your free entertainment. I'm here with Mike Shinoda of Linkin Park, and also just Mike Shinoda.
Of Mike Shinoda fame.
Mike, I've brought you to share with me some, if you can hear this, that's a box of Girl Scout Thin Mint cookies.
Those are delicious. Those are one of my favorite cookies.
They really are the best. I unfortunately did not have time to freeze these, which is really what you would prefer with in a Thin Mint.
Yeah.
But...
They just smell like
They
heaven,
smell amazing.
They?
Mm-hmm. 2 months ago, a den mother came to my door with like five little girls, and I was like, yes! I mean, it's the only time you can really act excited around little Girl Scouts without being arrested. So I just ordered shitloads of boxes of them, and then, of course, I travel so much, I'm out of town. I come home, and my girlfriend was like, did you order like 10 boxes of Girl Scout cookies? Because I just paid for them. So yes. It's...
I don't know a lot about... I've done a lot of interviews, but I don't know a lot about the like etiquette of doing interviews. But I do know that eating during an interview is
it's the best thing, right?
Definitely. Like one of the top three things that you do when you sit down for an interview, you start eating, chewing gum, things like that.
Well, because the good part about it is you want to make sure that when you're talking to someone that your mouth is open and they can see how much food is in your gaping maw. And so I find like that's how I like to roll on the Nerdist podcast. By the way, normally I'm joined by Jonah Ray and Matt Myra. Poor Matt was stuck in Boston because of weather issues. Mm. And Jonah got sent out of town to shoot a web soup sketch that I think involves some sort of Rube Goldberg, someone getting hit in the nuts type of a mechanism. So if you're cool, it's just rolling.
It's a better version of the OK Go video. In other words.
Except at the end, instead of getting hit with paint, you get
God,
hit in the
how
nuts.
Awesome would that be? Like, yeah, if you wanted to up the ante on the OK Go video, one of them would die. Or you know what I mean?
There would
like,
have to be some sort of something.
It's just paintballs.
It would have to be attacked by tigers or something at the end.
Yes.
I think that I would like to see that meme develop, the OK Go meme. Those poor guys, I love that video, and I know I saw it on your blog, too, and I put it on mine.
I love it.
My favorite thing about the video is watching the intensity on their faces. Just know, like, you know they've done this, like, I think it took them 52 tries.
Yeah.
You know they've done it, like, 30 times or whatever, 50 times, and it's just the, please, everything work.
We've already broken one piano. Please don't let the second fucking piano.
We don't have 50 pianos. I mean, just as an artist, being in Linkin Park, how do you look at that? Do you look at that video and go, "Fuck, I wish we had made that," or "Holy shit, we would never want to make a video like that."
Oh well, yeah, both. I mean, there's one part of me says, Well, first of all, I have to say on the positive side, the guys were. I actually sent that video to some of our team because I always tell them I have a design background, mm-hmm. graphic design background, and illustration background, and the one thing that I always try to make happen, and it never seems to happen. I say it, and the words just kind of evaporate into thin air, and nobody ever hears me. Is that we should try and do more with less. Mm-hmm. We should try and make the biggest impact and the greatest design with as little money, for one thing, as possible, right? And their first video from this, one of the first videos I saw from this album, the What the Fuck video, mm-hmm. the WTF video,
yep.
it was, I mean, they literally just, I think they basically found like a bug in the recording software they were using or something. It was like some bug that they were able to manipulate, and they just used that and they choreographed a great video. It's kind of the same thing as the treadmill video.
Mm-hmm.
You use a great idea, and then it doesn't cost a lot to get it done. You just do it because you've got a good idea.
Right.
So I sent that to everybody, and I said, you know, the WTF video, and then I sent them the other one and said, okay, or if you've got a whole bunch of time and a whole bunch of money, then you could do this.
Right.
So I do love that video. It did occur to me, though, that it would be it's the absolute opposite of what I want to do with a video as far as, like, spending your time doing something, because 60 takes of that would be maddening. Right?
Hey, by the way, wouldn't it have been awesome to have been – I always think about, like, boy, if I could have been anywhere in history, I feel like being in a rock band in, like, the 70s or, like, a glam rock band in the 80s where it was just, like – they back a truck of money up to your house and then a secondary truck full of vaginas. And then that's it. That's your life, basically. You know, like now everyone is so, like, so efficiency conscious.
Yeah.
And just, but to imagine living in a time where it was like, fuck, $2 million, who gives a shit? You know, let's do it. What? No condoms, whatever. I don't even know that word. Like, just that whole concept. I mean, do you ever wish that Linkin Park had been like a 70s band where it could have been dirty and greasy?
It wouldn't work. You know what I mean? Like, that's the. We probably wouldn't have ended up being interested in being a band that anybody knows because we would have looked at all that and just been like, that's a nightmare. Like, I don't want to be out on tour with that. That would, like. I would go crazy.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I mean, I'm the most boring. You know, I'll do shows on the road. And then
you just called me boring. That's fucked up, dude.
No, me. and let's be honest, you too. You too. We're nerds, though. We're nerds. Like, we'll do the boring test. Tell me if this sounds about your speed.
Wait, first of all, look how we started out. We started out with Girl Scout Thin Mints. So
Thin Mint cookies, and we're in a conference room.
Yeah.
We're in a conference room.
Okay, so you're saying.
I was saying, you know, for me... You know, my little pre-show ritual is light snack, maybe some almonds, a little chai tea, do a show, drink a bunch of water, like to stay hydrated, and get all responsible up in this motherfucker, and then I'll have some chamomile or mint tea right after the show, after I meet people, and then I go to bed.
That is so funny that you try and put that forward as your, like, persona, because, I mean, you know, that's the reason, obviously, you don't do these podcasts with video is that I know that you've got LSD in your headband right now, but you know, these people have no idea. So that's cool though. That's really cool that you kind of play up the nerd persona.
I don't know if I agree with you, but I would like to ask the flaming giraffe sitting next to you if he agrees with you. And also, have you ever considered that we're just falling into a vortex of time? Anyway.
I did, by the way, bring you a gift as well. I brought two. Because one's for you, and then you can give away the other one.
I would love to.
I've got two books. They're the same, so they're not two different books.
So one's not a little bit better than the other. Because I'll keep the one that's a little bit better.
If you like, I did sign both of them.
So oh my god, that's awesome!
Like, if you like one of the signatures better than the other one, but yeah, I did. Like I said, I do have a design and illustration background. I did an art show called Glorious Excess, and this is the book that kind of. Went with the show. So
oh,
one
yeah.
of these is for you.
That is awesome.
And you can do whatever you want.
Thank
with
you
the
so
other
much.
One, give them
yeah,
away
I saw.
Who...
I saw the link to. I saw the link to a bunch of the slides from the show, and it looks amazing. And this is something that
Thank
I.
You.
This is really something that I want to get into a little more as well. Is do you feel like in today's artistic climate that it's really. And I know that's a kind of a stupid way to say that, but do you feel like it's important to do as many things as possible? Because I feel like we came from a generation where our parents and maybe our grandparents were like, focus on one thing and just do one thing. And now we're getting into
this
area.
That one thing is the family business.
The family business, whatever it is, in my what did your dad do? Your dad did something cool.
No, my dad, I couldn't really get into the family business because my dad was essentially like a rocket scientist. So it'd be tough for me to follow to go in that direction.
My dad was also involved in a field that was related to physics. He was a professional bowler. And so there's a lot of exchange of momentum and rotational axes and things of that nature.
Did he try and get you into bowling?
He never tried, but here's the thing. I mean, I grew up in bowling shoes, you know? Like, there's
awesome
pictures of me when I'm three bowling.
Oh, that's great.
And then he retired from the Pro Bowlers Tour and then opened a bowling center. So the first 13 years of my life, I was in a bowling center. My parents met because my mother's father owned a couple bowling centers. Like, wow. My whole fucking family tapestry was bowling. A little bit easier to get into, probably, than rocket science, which you have to go to school
for. That's the simple way of describing what my dad did. He had an engineering background. He worked mostly in management. He wasn't like the scientist who was like developing new technology that they put in the space shuttle. Mm. But he did work in the space program. He did work in aerospace he did stuff that ended up. I guess some of their projects like were some kind of tracking or computer system for the Apache helicopter. And
oh my god, F-15. That's awesome!
So, like as a kid, like when I was little, the movie Top Gun came out.
Yeah,
you know, that I mean, for any kid that age, boys that age, that was like the coolest movie, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's pretty accurate. Like we all went,
especially that hot shirtless volleyball scene. That was really, that's when you really get to see how the Navy works.
Dude, on that note, I think it was just perfectly targeted our demographic because it had just enough of a sex scene that you were like, oh, sweet.
Yeah.
You're totally getting it on.
Yeah.
But after that movie came out, you know, I know all of my friends were way into like fighter jets and stuff like that. And my dad was bringing home models of the stuff that they worked on. Like, I couldn't be cooler in my nerdy little friend group because I had calendars of F-15s and, like, SR-71s and Apache.
The SR-71 Blackbird.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it was super cool for a minute that my dad did what he did. But except the only problem was that he couldn't talk about what he did. You know?
That sucks.
It's so cool, though. It's tough, but it was cool.
Now, when you were watching Airwolf, did he walk by and go, bullshit, bullshit, this is bullshit?
No, you wouldn't even let me watch it.
He wouldn't even let you watch it.
Yeah, you're not watching that crap.
And similarly, when people ask my dad if he liked Kingpin, he's like, it was a cute movie, but it's not really how it was.
Kingpin.
I'm like, yeah, I know that's not really how it does. The Amish don't fucking bowl either. There's a lot of, that's where you're going to suspend your disbelief, Dad? But yeah, do you feel like it's important? Because I feel like, you know, this is such a content-driven world,
yeah,
that you really need to be able to, like, you told me you're going to be in marketing meetings all day.
Yes,
and that's
true.
And it's essential now, and I feel like I didn't go to school to study marketing, you know?
Right.
I studied philosophy, which is,
didn't. So did our bass player.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So then, of course, we're applying those degrees in weird, you know, artistic fields.
Yeah. Well, for him, I think, I mean, I don't want to get too far off the tracks here, but the as far as like having diverse interests and being focused and not, you know, swimming in bucket loads of cocaine,
mm-hmm,
you know, can you swim in bucket
loads? Yeah, I think so. You can swim in a bucket load of cocaine.
If you mix it with enough vodka, you can
swim. What's great is the more you swim, the faster you swim because it's getting into
so, yeah. I wouldn't know because I have to spend all my time in marketing.
It's like Kit going on turbo mode. Then you just like the fins come out and then you're invincible temporarily until your heart explodes.
But we actually are very serious about the various interests that each of the guys have. We're interested in putting those out there just as a function of like that's who we are individually, and mm-hmm, it kind of gets that stuff out of our system, and it doesn't we don't find ourselves trying to inject it into like what is Linkin Park, you mm-hmm know what I'm saying? So I'm not the stuff that I do with my art show or stuff that I put on MikeShinoda.com. Like, I can kind of just get that out of my system, and then I'm not, like, trying to make these themes that show up in my paintings. I'm not trying to, like, make them work in a Linkin Park song, which kind of wouldn't work.
Right.
You know? So it's I feel like it's a healthy balance. And yeah, you're right. Like, you know, a lot, there's room for it on the internet, you know, and it's beneficial to just have that stuff out there, and, you know, people kind of get a sense of who you are, and, you know, then hopefully you get a lot of really weird people from all over the world stalking you, and that's
in different ways.
Yeah, it's really great. It's a really great thing to have.
I mean, do you think that it is essential, though? Do you think that it's essential to put out as many different types of things as possible, or do you think it's essential to have a marketing background, like, to be able to understand any of the marketing stuff?
I don't feel like it's essential. I feel like it's essential to have it under control, but I don't. I feel like it's essential for it to be done well, but I don't feel like the artist needs to do it, and I also don't feel like it's essential for every artist to do it the same way. Obviously, like, there are a lot of bands that benefit from the mystery created by not being available online.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, whereas I think like, using maybe Trent Reznor or Jack White as an example, like, if those guys were as available as Ashton Kutcher, you would be really, really bummed that they would be a different guy.
Now, is Trent in a breakup with Twitter right now? Because, like, in the beginning, he was Mr. Twitter.
I have no idea. I don't follow. I mean, I guess those are bad examples because I'm not that, like...
He was Mr. Twitter for a while, Trent, and then it got to a point where he was overwhelmed by the immediacy of, like, it was not enough of a wall between himself and people.
That's why I didn't get on right away.
And he literally was just like, I fucking quit, and wrote a thing and said, fuck you in the face, guys. I'm done with this. I don't need this bullshit.
I'm able sometimes to learn from other people's mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's a great scenario for me where I don't have to, like, go through it myself. So when I see other people do that thing and they go, oh shit, like, I really don't have enough privacy to keep myself, like,
right,
sane. And I can look at that and go, ah, then I'm not going to do that.
Yeah.
So I was actually really, really late joining Twitter. And it was mostly because I don't feel comfortable, like, having people, like, right there, you know, on my, like, just knowing every little move, because it's not how I kind of do things.
Mm-hmm.
But that's why the blog actually works really well for me.
I like your blog.
Thank you.
And I feel like I feel like...
Not many people do, so that's really...
I really do, because I feel like mine is similar in the sense that, you know, it's not... You're not putting up Mike Shinoda news every 5 minutes.
Oh, right.
You know,
you're saying,
here's a cool thing that I saw. Like, you know, this sort of Tumblr approach to blogs that I feel like is kind of mine too. I throw a bunch of stuff on there occasionally, like, oh, here's the thing I'm doing.
Yeah.
But I think it's the perfect way that the internet should be used, which is you're genuinely sharing information, you're giving back to the internet as much as you're taking.
Right. And I do like I put stuff up there all the time that is kind of like the OK Go thing, for example.
Mm-hmm.
I've never met those guys.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even have their... I only have their newer record. I don't have anything else by them. Or I know nothing about the band except that I read... is the guy's name Damien? I read the singer's piece in the New York Times. And I was like, that's awesome.
He
nailed it. And we have our own drama, which I can't really get into, partially because I can't and partially because I don't fully understand it, with our label and YouTube. We had our own issues where they pulled... I know this about ours, just to give you an idea of why I was... I ended up where I ended up with those guys. We had, like, the number one... Between number one and number five music channel on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
Bigger than everything, right? And it was mostly based on the fact that our videos were there and they were getting a shitload of traffic. Warner Brothers couldn't come to a deal with YouTube and they pulled all of them.
Oh,
so
lost all your subscribers?
We lost everything.
Oh,
they essentially erased our channel, and then we had to, like, reboot it basically. So
it's just that it's that short-term bullshit bottom line thinking, and I guess if all I know how to do is look at spreadsheets, then maybe I
can understand what they're... It's like the New York Times, like the piece that he wrote in the New York Times, but they don't understand that long-term, it's so much more beneficial to you to be able to corral your fans and followers. And, I mean, like, that will keep them being fans for life for the next several albums rather than, hey, sorry, big company, you're not making a few thousand bucks on stupid ads that you've laid on those things.
Yeah, we've got
costing us millions in future income.
We've got 5 million views on one video, and you just... erased it.
All of it.
You can't get it back. So, you know, now they've got like a few hundred thousand views on videos and people go to them and go, oh, this band, like, you know, we're going to meetings with other organizations saying like, okay, you know, you should help sponsor our tour to give your listeners an idea. If Girl Scout Cookies sponsors our tour, that makes the ticket prices lower for fans. So that's a good thing, right? If Girl Scout Cookies shows up at the meeting and they go, well, we looked you guys up online and you really, like, you've got 300,000 views on your
videos.
No,
but you don't understand. We had 5 million.
We've sold 50 million records. I promise you we don't have 250,000 fans watching a video. Warner Brothers erased it. And they're just like, but we don't know how, you know, can you give us more specific numbers?
And it is such a, you know, because everything is so ad-driven now, it's such a metric-obsessed world where, I mean, and, you know, of course, I get excited when I feel like, oh, more people are listening to the podcast, more people are watching the show. But, you know, I think we get so obsessed with the numbers.
Yeah, yeah.
That, I mean, it's like Twitter. It's fun to have a lot of Twitter followers.
That's
like
a great example.
But the truth of the matter is, you know, would you rather have a million Twitter followers that are sort of committed to you, or would you rather have 10,000 who are diehard fans? You would rather have the 10,000 diehard fans, you know?
And I definitely already feel like, I'm only following like 15 or 20 people, and I'm already at that point where I'm like, there's too much shit on my Twitter feed. Like,
yeah.
You know, I mean, it comes back around to that. The reason I was like hesitant in the first place, like, I don't want to be that locked into it, you know, and involved in it. I need a little bit of distance. I need a little bit of privacy.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, when the 90s rolled around and the internet.com, all that the shit, when we first started getting a sense of it, people were like, it's the information age.
Yeah.
And now I feel like we're in a sub-age of the managing that information age.
It's a filter age.
It really is. It is. It's a much better way, a much, much, much better way to put it.
I don't think I think that came from somebody else, but... Yeah, I don't know where.
Let's just say it.
I definitely coined that.
Let's call it Mike Shinoda's filter age. It wasn't the band Filter that came up with it. No, Filter's everything. Everything. They use that word.
No, but I mean, if you think about it, then that's the reason that you and I, like, it's our instinct to, like, put the stuff we like up on our sites. I mean, and there are tons of people who listen to your podcast to do the same. It's about like sharing with your friends the stuff that you know doesn't suck. Because
right.
There's so much stuff that's annoying or it sucks or it's just like there's so much noise. And it's everybody's job to say, you know, okay, of all that shit, like, this is something you should check
out. Yeah, you're right. We've really become a culture of aggregators.
Yeah,
totally. And it was never... I mean, I guess to a degree it was like that when I was a kid, where it was, oh, check out this game to maybe four other people.
Yeah, right, right. But at that point, I mean, if you go back far enough, I forget what book it was I was reading. Maybe you can help me out with that. But it was talking about how in the beginning of, like, if you think about music going back, what do you have, like Ed Sullivan? I mean, you've got literally like one show
where
it's like, this is what everyone listens to. And everybody goes, yes, sir. And they've listened to that one thing. And then all of a sudden you've got a couple shows. And then all of a sudden you've got a couple channels.
Mm-hmm.
And now where are we at? We're like, what do you, I mean, I actually just spoke to Tim, the founder of Pandora. I just spoke to him for the first time. I think it was yesterday. Yeah, it was yesterday. Sorry, brain.
That's all right.
Freeze. And he,
maybe you should have a cookie.
I know.
To loosen up that brain freeze.
He we were talking about how, I mean, like, he was saying how if you do it, if they, you know, look at their databases and talk and they could do some really great analysis for, you know, record labels, for musicians, for whoever, just to get a sense of like where your people are at.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you want to talk to your fans, you want to get your fans a message, then here's where they are.
Yeah.
But then even he was like, and that's only pretty much like we stand behind our thing, the music genome thing. But when you leave Pandora, that's the Wild West, and I can't vouch for any of it. It could be completely different
right.
from Pandora, but I know within Pandora, that's what it is. There's, you know, there's a million of those universes out there, and we're just trying to sift through it all and find the good stuff and contact, get in contact with the people that have similar interests to us.
Well, and you guys in Lincoln Park has a has its own social network,
mm-hmm.
Which is super awesome. I actually am working with the. The girls who, I mean, I don't, girls, they're 8 years old. They sold me these cookies. With the ladies who helped put together your social network, I'm working on one as well. And I feel like it's really important, you know, because so, like, third, like, social networks like Facebook or whatever, yep. It just feels like that's everyone.
Right.
And, you know, it's just like trying to pull people away and form your own little bubble.
Yeah.
Where you can really connect with people that are like that are genuinely like-minded, like really specifically to the yeah. molecule like-minded. Yeah. And are you finding that that's working with your social network?
Well, our network is the heart of our network is mostly based in the fans that are like, you know, we're what you would call off cycle right mm-hmm. now. We're in between records. We don't have singles on the radio per se, and so the fans that tend to be on the network are ones that are like really following. Just because they're fans, like they're in their own words, they're like, whatever you guys do, we're gonna be fans. I got a Linkin Park tattoo on my back, and that's that.
Right.
You know. So that person, you know, we try and keep them. We obviously there's some kind of connection going there. We must be interested in the same things, or they wouldn't be visiting my blog and wouldn't be doing these, you know, participating in the contests on LinkinPark.com, whatever. But once we get into cycle. Then you get, you know, you start reaching out to the more casual listener.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's just where it gets tricky. Like Ashton Kutcher on Twitter, like he's got a shitload of casual followers.
Right.
You know, and they don't necessarily love him, but he was one of the ones that was recommended when they first joined. And he was on the top of the list and they joined and he was slightly entertaining.
Right.
In their opinion.
But does that mean that they're, you know, if he were to do a live show, are those people real? Because it is.
I would say no.
It is such a big difference to.
I would love. I value the more dedicated fans over the casual ones, because obviously because they are what they are. Like they're actually following. However, it doesn't mean that I think the casual ones are not valuable. I think they are valuable. I think I'm. Not making any sense.
I know what you mean. I know what you mean. You're ultimately. I think you're ultimately saying that
you got to prioritize.
And the hardcore fans are going to be the ones that are going to support you through lean times.
Yeah.
Through, you know, like through all of it.
Yeah.
It's like that. The story, the article about finding 1,000 true fans.
Yeah.
Did you ever read that? If you,
yeah,
you know like
that.
Any
yeah.
artist can, you know, if you can pull together 1,000 true yeah. fans, you can make a decent living.
Yeah.
And really connect. But ultimately, if you can pull together 1,000 fans, then you'll probably pull together 2,000, and then at a certain point it'll tip, you
yeah,
know?
Exactly.
You guys have been around long enough that you've probably seen everything make the shift as far as internet digital culture.
Oh, okay.
And,
okay.
I mean, you know.
Well, to give you an idea, like when we started out, our demo, we had a street team that mm-hmm. we were in touch with via snail mail and
yep.
and email. Email was just starting to be taken on by the masses of at least in our like late teens, early 20s mm-hmm. Demo. And we were, I mean, you know, we were basically, that was at every show we'd have our little mailing list and mm-hmm. they'd fill in one or the other or both and we'd contact them when our record was coming out. Hybrid Theory was our first album, came out around 2001, and we literally mailed our street team cassette demos,
nice
cassette singles,
singles.
Like, it was One Step Closer on the A side and a song called and With You on the B side, and they got those, and a lot of them, you know, gave those out to friends and asked for more, and they got stickers and those things, and yeah, the whole thing has been. You know, it's just that's just to say that's where we started it. But I mean, even at that point, just as a side note, I tell people this all the time that we always felt like we were really energized by the internet. We were excited about it and felt like that it played a role in who we were as a band. Mm-hmm. So we actually chose the name Linkin Park because we could get the domain name. Like
we
renamed the band. We had to rename the band for legal reasons. We were called Zero, and then we were called Hybrid Theory. Mm-hmm. And we couldn't use those names, so we had to choose a different one. And we wanted to use Linkin Park for various reasons, but the presidentialspelling.com was taken. Mm-hmm. So we changed the spelling of the band, the name of the band, so we could get the .com. And we did, and it panned out. It actually worked. It was really great for us because people could find us directly. They just type it in .com, and there we were. And they could get on board, join the network, you know, see what we were up to. And because of the name Linkin Park, they all thought we were a local band.
Mm-hmm.
So there was that connection too. Like, oh, we're from Chicago. They're from Chicago.
Right.
Actually, we're from LA, but they didn't know that.
And now it's too late. They're hooked. Yeah.
But we, you know, it's evolved. Because we got, just because we loved it and we were excited about it and we got kind of an early start on it. We followed it, you know, in our own way. We found ways to make the internet work for us. And at this point, we're still learning. Right now, it's a bad time for me to be talking about us, the band being like, I don't know, I guess you could say savvy when it comes to the internet. Because if you go to our site right now, I actually really don't like the design of the site. It's an interim site. But we have a video game coming out on iPhone, iPod Touch, and iPad. And so the game is kind of, the site is kind of skinned to look like the game. So it.
Did you help develop the game?
Yeah, I designed some of the characters.
Is so fantastic, and just, I mean, that must be gratifying. I mean, like, you know, I know we complain a lot, like, oh, there's so many different media outlets, and it's so hard to pull everything together to just fire a concentrated stream at people. But at the same time, it allows you to make a lot of different types of content, which I'm sure is thoroughly creatively satisfying.
Absolutely, that's well put.
So, right. what's the game out yet?
It's coming out in the next. It's tough with Apple if you don't know.
You don't know.
You submit your game and then they put it into the system and then it pops out from, you know, a few weeks to.
Yeah, Apple really doesn't give a crap about anyone. Like, they, because you would think, hey, Linkin Park, you know, kind of a big band, maybe you could run that down the pipeline faster. But I always say, like, Apple is like the hot cheerleader who won't fuck you, but you'll carry your books anyway. You know, like, it doesn't matter. Like, everything I own is Apple, and they've never given me anything. And, you know, like, and you have this thing with the app.
Well, I have to say, I mean, we have a good relationship with Apple. They have given me things.
They have.
I got a bunch of software from them.
That's awesome.
They don't give hardware though. They won't give you hardware, but they'll give you software if you're in Linkin Park.
That's fantastic. So, do you need a melodica player? Because I can fucking play a sick melodica.
I don't even know, what is that?
A melodica is like a...
Is it like a theremin?
No. It operates like a similar principle of an accordion, but you blow into it. So it's a keyboard that you blow into, and it kind of sounds like an accordion. You remember the band The Hooters?
I know what that is,
Remember the band The Hooters? That's a slang.
Got it.
I'm just saying, you know, if you're ever in Philadelphia and you go to that, if you go to that Hard Rock Cafe,
that you wouldn't want to join Linkin Park just to join Linkin Park, but you would want to join Linkin Park to get free Apple shit.
I would want to. Well, it's twofold. I want to join Linkin Park to bring you the melodica flair that I feel like you guys so desperately need,
and we do.
And then at the same time, the side benefit is that I get Apple stuff.
Funny. I feel like if you heard the new music, you would actually go, oh, melodica would probably fit. It's funny, you know, we mentioned that I'm doing the brand, the marketing thing meetings later today. That's basically, we are in a position right now with the band where we need to be talking about, like, how do we communicate to our fans at this point in our career where we basically put out an album. Last time we put out was Minutes to Midnight, 2007. We haven't put out an album really of new music since then, and the new music is very different.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like Hybrid Theory and Meteora. It's not like Minutes to Midnight. Rick Rubin and I are producing. The band has been really prolific. We've written some just great, I mean, it's just really different stuff, really stuff I really like, and we are looking, we're looking at this point in our career where, you know, it's going to, speaking of Pandora, when mm-hmm. I was talking to Tim, it's not going to necessarily fit well on the old Linkin Park channel.
Oh, so the algorithm is going to have to change a little bit.
Well, that's what I was asking him. We don't want to fake it at all. I mean, right. I told him when I first talked to him, I said, I'm not talking to you because I want to cheat the system.
Right.
I'm talking to you because I think that the music sounds different enough. I don't know. It just sounds different. And I don't know what it sounds like. In fact, I don't know what other bands it even sounds like. So you guys are masters of the genres and the music genome thing. Like, you tell me what I have to look at or what I have to do to, like, figure out how this fits into today's world. Like, does it just sit on its own? Or should I actually, should we make efforts to, like, go into certain channels and say, hey, what do you think of this? Does this sound crazy? Does this relate to the bands that you listen to? Go to the old Linkin Park fans and say, what do you think of this? Do you guys hate us now?
Beta testing.
You know? Yeah, but it's you have to go outside of what you normally would do as a band. Normally, you just go out and play shows and be like, cool, here's the new music. But
right.
there are other opportunities. Like, we can do it online, and we can beta test to a certain degree and find out, you know, what do people think of this? And are we finding new fans elsewhere, like outside of the normal circle? Like, if you want to come, if you like Hybrid Theory, come to the show. We still play Hybrid Theory music.
Right.
If you don't like the new stuff, then just come to the show and we'll play Hybrid Theory stuff.
And that's probably an interesting challenge, especially as a musician, where, you know, I'm sure there's an expectation of some fans just want to hear the same sound because there's a thing they focus in on. But then, you know, you obviously want to keep evolving. Like, that's the only way you can survive. You can't just keep making the same sound. So is it kind of scary when you know, each time you do another album, you feel like, yeah, it's a little bit different in these ways, or like this case where you feel like it's totally different. Do you get anxious about it?
Yeah. Right now, I've kind of already gotten through that point, but there was a point when I was pretty much scared to death about like the fact that it sounded so different.
Mm-hmm.
But as long as, for me, I feel like if it's good, if I know it's good and I know I really, really like it and I wouldn't change anything about it, which is usually where you want to end up at the end of a record when mm-hmm. it's like you've ironed out all the kinks and it's like it's right.
Right.
Then you can at least stand behind it and say, okay, I wouldn't change anything. And if anybody else doesn't like it, then, you know, hopefully it's not our last record, knock on wood. Like,
right.
We're going to keep making records and it may keep changing. And you may like this one and not like the next. You may love this one or you may hate this one and you love the next one. I mean, who knows? Regardless, the perfect world for us is where, you know, a lot of the old fans go, that's really different, but it's still Linkin Park and I love it. And then other people who, you know, hear this stuff go, that does sound new and different. And I like that about it. And I like what it is.
That's funny. When I remember one of my favorite kind of band evolution tracks is Smashing Pumpkins.
Mm.
I mean, they just, you know, like, for me, they just went from this cute kind of indie sort of band to, you know, Billy Corgan's, like, weird gothic Uncle Fester phase of druid capes and shaved heads. And so after, I think it was the album after Melancholy, which was, you know, like a really heavy album. And I think the album after that didn't do as well. And I heard him on Stern. And you could just hear the bitterness in his voice where it was just like, yeah, the fans did not support us on this album, which I don't think you should say out loud. Fine to think that, but you know, may have been the case.
Yeah,
but I'm sure in his mind he was like, "Fuck you guys!" You know, we tried to do something totally different.
I just read something in Rolling Stone. He had a piece. They had a piece on him, and he had a little bit of that still. Like he had a little bit of his like the comment. What? And I'm butchering the words, but it was something to the effect of like, "I haven't gotten my just desserts." Like I'm, you
wow.
know what I mean? Like I. We made, and he's not wrong. It's almost like a Kanye West kind of thing to say. Like, I made music that influenced not just fans and the direction of alternative music, but I influenced other musicians mm-hmm. who then copied it and did other things that were like it and got and sold more records, etc.
Yeah.
And there's a bitterness in that. Like, I've met a lot of bands and a lot of artists who have been in those shoes, and it's a hard thing to. For any of us to like deal with.
I agree, Mike, because I influenced a lot of white sarcastic television hosts with my work on MTV's Singled Out, and I have not gotten my just desserts or influencing a generation of snarky white guys. You know what's funny to me is when Web Soup started, people were like, you're just ripping off Joel McHale. And I'm like, look, I love Joel. I've been hosting shows a decade longer. Like, I have been a snarky white guy on television as long as a lot of today's powerful consumers have been alive.
Oh, that's awesome.
But it's funny. I mean, but still, like, you shouldn't. I just feel like you shouldn't say that stuff out loud. Yeah. I was kidding about the influencing the snarky white guy host, by the way. I don't want to get emails from people like,
hey, fuck you, man. Yeah, this coming from the same guy who sent me an email and, like, before you sign your name, you always write something fucking insane. And the last one was, instead of, like, best or thanks, it was boobs.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm sure you don't even know what you're writing. Do you write the same one all day?
No,
or is it just
I don't
random?
Know. Whatever. I just never know what to say at the end of it. Like, I never know what the good exit word is.
Apparently, sometimes the good exit word is Excelsior.
Excelsior,
sometimes. I think that's my favorite one.
Sometimes it'll be tits, wieners, I don't know. I just, any whatever word is at the forefront
really
of my head.
I really hope the people listening to your podcast don't start ripping that off. It's really sad. That's another thing, you know. You would have been the father of this thing, and then all of a sudden everybody's doing it. I'm starting getting emails from everybody else. Boobs, Excelsior, and then it's like, I know where that came from.
I would love to see that meme develop. Well, hopefully, the Girl Scouts of America will start signing off their emails with boobs. Thanks for buying these Thin Mints. Boobs to be. So awkward.
Boobs, parentheses, someday.
Someday, buds. Why did I get an email that signed pencil erasers? Oh, it's from the Girl Scouts of America. Oh, why am I being led away in handcuffs? I wanted to ask you...
we're running out of time, right?
We're running out of time a little bit, but I mean, I still... I'm basically late for an Attack of the Show table read, but I want to be late for it because... I was really worried. We've never really talked.
Right.
I mean, we've emailed back and forth. I didn't have Jonah Ray here or Matt here. And, you know, usually it's helpful to have a couple of people just to keep the conversation going. But I really love talking to you so much about this stuff. And I feel like we could nerd out about this for hours. But there's a couple more things that I want to before we let go. But what's your... like, do you have sort of a productivity regime that you follow? Do you have is there a to-do list or is there a calendar? Like, how do you keep everything, you know, with all of your different, the things you got going on? How do you keep it all in check?
Do you know 4-Hour Work Week by Tim Ferriss?
I know Tim very well,
you know,
actually.
Tim?
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
Tech world is such a small world, yeah.
He's a great guy.
I really like Tim. Tim's great, and his book is, it was a really, it was inspiring to me. I felt like... if you look at the kind of trajectory of Linkin Park, you can tell that we were kind of like biting off more than we can chew in a lot of cases, like back in, you know, say 5 years ago. We had a marketing label, and we had a record label, and we were doing projects with other bands and remixes and live stuff and all this junk, right? And the fans were funny because, like, just, you know, there's a little noise in the background of like fans on the message boards and whatever going like, dude, could you guys just like make albums and play shows? Because we really want those two things more than anything else.
That's the danger. You get caught up in so many of the other things that you forget. Like, oh wait, here's the main thing I'm doing.
But it's also like it's the main thing that I mean, in their opinion, and I we're lucky if this is true that we're good at. Mm-hmm. If that is truly the thing that we're best at, which I hope it is, then we should be doing it. And I have, like, as far as productivity, I have tried to reel things in a little bit and make my daily schedule more about that. You know, I basically try and do 5 days a week instead of seven. And I do some other things to get my head straight, you know, just like social stuff. And I have like season tickets to the Lakers. Stuff to like get my head out of the music.
Yeah.
Because I actually find that when I come back and start working again, I'm super fresh and I have thought of, you know, when I'm in the car going somewhere else to do something else, I'm relaxed and fresh and ideas pop into my head and then they can kind of sit and I can let them marinate and then I show up in the studio and I've had some time to think about the thing I'm going to do and I have some perspective and I can sit down on the song and make something that
hopefully is better.
And, it, you know, we also are in a culture of freelancers. And basically what you and I do is very similar to freelancing. Mm-hmm. When, you know, when, because you could get up in the middle of the night and write songs or, you know, or paint or something. Mm-hmm. And so it's finding ways to separate the idea that, you know, your workspace is 3 feet from your bed, you know, totally. Ostensibly.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, yeah.
I mean, I
do have a studio at my house that I can, we actually do a lot of our music at my house and at the other guys' houses. And so it literally is like you could walk down the hall and do some writing, and that's very tempting.
It is, but do you use, are you an iCal guy, or are you an
iCal? I am on Mac, and I do, I have an assistant, and we keep things organized with iCal, and like he helps me keep my my schedule from becoming a total wreck, which is, you know, it involves family stuff and stuff like that too. So that's I do. I if not for my phone, I think I would. I don't have a great memory for. You know, places to be at what time, blah blah blah, and people's, you know.
I would just be if I didn't have my iPhone with my iCal and like and things as an app that I use.
Do you use like a note taking program?
I use Evernote.
Me too.
Because it, you know, it syncs up on all the different platforms between your, you know, desktop, web portal, iPhone.
And you know what I do? I have a note that is called Restaurants and Hotels. I have a note called Wine List.
Yes.
I have a note called Movies.
And
to
you take
see.
I take pictures of food constantly. I look like an asshole in restaurants, like setting food, like I'm doing some
you're
kind
gonna
of
be
goddamn
that blog
product
guy,
placement.
Like the guy who's gonna like blog what he ate.
I don't force that down people's throats. But I take Evernote still shots of food. Be like, this is a really great turkey burger that I had in Minneapolis, and I want to remember this place. And so I'm the guy taking, if you see me in a restaurant in another city, I am about to or have taken a picture of my food.
If it was bad, do you take a picture?
No, if it sucks, obviously, I won't, because I'll forget about it. But if this phone didn't organize my life, I would literally just sit in my driveway and sob, because I wouldn't know where I was supposed to be. I'd be like, I know I'm supposed to be doing something, I don't know what it is.
That was great.
I
do the same thing.
Can you comment at all on the, because I hooked you and Chris Anderson up from Wired. Did you guys meet up?
We spoke a bunch. We haven't met in person yet. I love Chris's books, and he's an inspiring guy. He's a guy with, you know, he's just a guy with great ideas and what seems to me to be a great way of organizing them.
Mm-hmm.
And so just to be able to have that that mental organization of big ideas and to be able to have that kind of perspective is really special. And so when I was reading Free, his which I got for free, like, uh-huh. It was incredible. I was like, I was on the Kindle bookstore, and I saw his name, and I was like, oh, he's, you know, I read, wait, what was the
Long Tail.
Long Tail. And he... And his name came up, and I saw Free, and I'm like, oh, that's cool. I should check that out. Like, I'll get around to it. But then I saw that it was actually free, and I'm like, okay, now that is
genius.
That is just like putting your money where your mouth is. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And I couldn't respect it more. I got it, started reading it right away. I've been really thrilled about like the ideas in there. Even though they're not, you know, a lot of the stuff in the book is actually funny, because it's just like bashing the music industry. He doesn't mean to, but it's like, it's basically just highlighting all the reasons the music industry has fucked itself.
Right.
Which I totally agree with pretty much 99% of it.
But to be fair, it's pretty much every entertainment sector.
It's not necessarily, I shouldn't say they fucked themselves, because they were on a ship that was doomed.
Right.
Like a doomed vessel that, you know, you can bucket the water overboard as much as you want, but that fucker is going to be.
Here's a great example for people who don't know of how the music industry works. My friends were at a label in the 90s, and one year they all got these CD clock radios for Christmas. Then on their next expense statement, the label expensed them for the presents that they didn't ask for. Like, that's classic music label shit.
You know, and what else is... The other part that's really funny is that they have a great way of hiding that stuff and hiding the money that they take from artists.
We haven't made the money back yet, you guys.
Well, no, it's all behind a giant... It's like the Wizard of Oz. Like, it's behind a giant curtain and they'll never tell you. I mean, literally, they will never... They have never in the history of the music industry had to take that information public. And people don't know it because nobody will say it because it's information about how they make their money is not public information.
Right.
So the fact that right now where they're at is that they started with that model and they had the foothold on that industry. And basically you could say, we were just talking about this the other day, you know, you could say, oh, well, I don't believe in that. That's bullshit. The labels shouldn't be able to take that much money from an artist. And so that's, I'm taking a stand and it's like, you know, so what do you do though? You can't do any, if you're an unsigned band and you don't have the things that the label can actually do well, which is promote your album worldwide and get you the kind of push that takes you to that next, that superstar level. They're the only way to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So they, to some degree, they deserve that money. You
right.
know, it's not that they don't deserve it. Like they do some really important stuff to deserve that money.
But
it's in this weird cloud that you can't like
right.
wrap your head around, and they won't let you look at it to be able to really distinguish.
And part of that argument with the classic record label structure was, how the fuck else are you going to get your record in a store? But now it's like, well,
you don't need to.
There aren't as many stores right. anymore.
I work with some friends of mine are in a group called Get Busy Committee, and Get Busy Committee has, in rough terms, sold about 10,000 records on their own.
I read this blog post, by the way, and that they use this great website called Kickstart.
They have an awesome, awesome program going. Is it Kickstarter?
Kickstarter.
They have an awesome program, and they just added two things to their thing. So here's, look, Get Busy Committee. Ryu from Get Busy was in a group that was signed to, we helped get them on Warner, and it fell apart and he was miserable and Warner didn't want to do anything with them. And long story short, they all parted ways, luckily. Lucky for Warner and lucky for them, because they're not going to sell 10 million copies.
Right.
So that's going to be bad for Warner. And
right.
they're not going to sell 10 million copies. And if Warner's taking a big chunk of the money they would make from their 10,000 records, then that would be bad for the band.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So with all that said, they're better off indie. So they went indie. Ian Rogers and I help out with the band and Topspin. And they did they're basically doing a project, a fundraiser on Kickstarter, where if they raise $3,000, then everybody who participates in it, that's the way Kickstarter works, then if they can raise the amount, then the project goes through, and here's what the project is. It's platinum record. Platinum plaques, essentially,
yeah.
with a record that actually has music on it. And for one person who donates $1,000, well, actually, let me get to that in a second.
Okay.
I'm going to lead you up to it.
Okay.
For people who donate like $25 or $50 or whatever the lower levels are, you get a signed copy of it. You get a plaque.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. There's some new stuff on there that just showed up in the last like 24 hours, where Scoop DeVille, who's their producer, who also produced tracks for Fat Joe and Snoop Dogg and mm-hmm. some other great artists, if you donate, I think it's $750, you get to go in the studio with him and the group.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
Right? You basically get, I mean, you could never buy that. You can't buy that. And you're going to be able to buy it for $750. It's incredible for somebody who's, especially for somebody who's into, you know, in engineering or hip hop production. Like, you could go to getbusycommittee.com right now, and you can, you know, find out how to get that, and you'll get it. Like, you just buy it, and it funds the project. But the $1,000 mark was, if you donate $1,000 to the project, they will record a song about you.
Holy shit.
And put it on the record.
That's genius.
And somebody bought it like within hours. Like, so this guy, I don't know what he does. I don't know who he is. I think he even has like a pseudonym, like this flashy nickname. And they're like, great, if this goes through, we've actually got to write a song about that dude and put it on the record.
That's amazing. And also, you know, the side benefit of that is, what a much better way to connect with your fans and really totally. Create hardcore fans, because you're really making them a part of your community. So Kickstarter, because I went on to Kickstarter, and it's, if you have any kind of project, they will create a platform to help you raise money for it, which is right. phenomenal.
It's a great,
so much better than just PayPal donate.
God, can you imagine if we had, I mean, for all the people who are in these little garage bands right now, you know, trying to play shows, trying to buy gear,
mm-hmm.
like, that is an awesome way to, if you can put up a couple songs and say, hey, listen, you know, we made these songs and we can't afford to buy a new guitar rig. Our guitar, like, in order to play any shows in the LA area, we live in LA, we want to play some shows, but we can't because we don't have a rig that we can play on. Mm-hmm. And we need, you know, $500. So if you like our music, donate to it. And then they can actually make that happen, make that a reality.
It's amazing.
It's so, it's incredible.
My buddy, Paula Tompkins, who's a comedian, you know, the challenge for any performer who does live shows is, it's a simple formula, but a difficult formula. If you can get people in seats, you can go perform places. Mm-hmm. So as comics, we always get people going, you know, come to Toledo, come to here, come to there. And someone said, someone sent Paul an email and said, come to Toronto. So Paul said, great, you get 300 people together to buy tickets, and I will come perform for you. So this guy took it upon himself. He started a Facebook group, got the 300 people. There I think it was go. Even more than that. Pre-sold the show, and then Paul went and did it. Like, it was the most perfect, ingenious way that, to, you know, like, yeah, you set up the show, and then you go do, right. You know, like, rather than...
It's more efficient, it's more effective.
Rather than getting the venue and then going, hey, I hope people show up to this.
Right.
You know, like, what a... Well, we know those people are dedicated.
Our band gets, I mean, I get, on my website alone, we get comments every single time I post anything. I get, like, a whole bunch of comments, like, when are you coming to Rio de Janeiro? When are you coming to South America? Blah, 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 South Africa? And it's like, well, when we know that we can go play a show there and sell the tickets.
Right.
So, and I actually told them this month on one of the posts I did, I do these response to comments posts, and I told them, look, if you start a petition and you have, let's say, 10,000, you've got to put 10,000 names on it.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't cheat it, and they have to be essentially trackable. They have to be real names, real people with real addresses, whatever. And you can show that to the rock concert promoter in South Africa. We'll come play. Like, that's what you need to do, because those guys, the only reason they're not setting up a Linkin Park show out there is because they don't think that they're not sure if the people will come.
Right. And that's all you need. You just need to know that people
will come. All they need to know is that the people will show up.
So for Linkin Park, the number's 10,000. For Chris Hardwick, you could start a Facebook group. 500. I'll say 500 will be fine.
I don't know if I told them 10 or 15 or 30.
Well, you guys are a full band. Like, it's so much fun to just, you know, I do sometimes I have a couple side comedy band projects, and one of them is a comedy duo, and, you know, we do video, and there's, you know, instruments, and when we're setting up, it's just like, fuck, you know, with stand-up, we could just walk up to a mic and tell jokes. Like, when you guys, you have a setup, like, you have to travel with
it's so complicated.
I walk up to a mic, and I'm like, dicks are weird, and then I leave. It's 45 minutes of that. But don't get me wrong, vaginas are weird, too, and then there's farts and air travel. But I mean, just the idea that, you know, you can connect with these people and they're literally a part of it. They're a part of your building process. Yeah. I mean, that even as a fan, I would be completely gratified by that.
Yeah. If you knew you set it up, like you made it happen.
I think the theme of this podcast so far has been go for it, which is important because I'm going to end the podcast with, a song. I have a side band that's an 80s glam metal band called Sniper. And we wrote, you know, we have our standard battery of songs, Beaver Hunt, I Want Your Cans, you know. But it's similar to stuff that Steel Panther does. But what we've decided to do is write the song that sort of signaled the demise of the band. So the idea is that the lead singer of this band starts fucking an actress and she does a shitty 80s movie that we figured was probably about an aerobics competition. That was what we could come up with. And so this song is the title track to Go For It from this fake movie for this fake band. And I think just kind of wraps up the idea. I mean, wouldn't you say this has been a Go For It podcast?
Oh, definitely. I think if we can set up, you know, you have the little picture, the podcast. Could we do one of those, like, inspirational pictures with, like, that has the image and then the little title and then the little, like, inspiration.
Yeah, yes. We can do one of those inspirational posters.
Yeah, we should do one of those.
If we could get someone to take a picture of us, we could do something and make a poster of ourselves.
I think that's good.
And put it on there. That would be good. Well, Mike Shinoda, thank you so much for taking the time to come out today. Do you want any of these Thin Mints to take with you?
I do want one more.
You know, go to linkinpark.com, go to mikeshinoda.com.
Oh, can I say one more?
Yeah, promote whatever you want.
We haven't talked about about this at all, but I know that you probably have some people listening who have some philanthropic interests.
Yes.
We actually, the thing that we're doing right now is an online album to benefit Haiti.
Awesome.
It is on musicforrelief.org, and the album is called Download to Donate, and it's got songs by Dave Matthews Band, Alanis Morissette, let's see, Crystal Method, Linkin Park, Kenna, Lupe Fiasco. I'm forgetting a whole bunch of bands, but they're all there. They're all great. They gave the songs for free, and you can have them for free. And then if you want, you can donate, and you can embed the widget on your Facebook, whatever, your blog, whatever it is. So please just go check that out real quick and see if you like it, and if you want the album, and if you want to donate, that would be...
That's awesome. Musicforrelief.org.
Yeah, music, the number four. F-O-R.
F-O-R.
Relief. That's F-O-R-R-E, so there's two R's in a row. People want to put one R for some reason. I don't know what that's about. Yeah, musicforrelief.org, and yeah, thanks.
Awesome. Thanks, Mike Shinoda.
Cool.
If you want to send email to congratulate or complain, I shouldn't tell people they can complain, but I feel like the internet knows that. You can write to podcast@nerdist.com. Thanks for listening. Sorry you weren't here, Jonah or Matt. You missed a good time. And that thing you mentioned about the Dave Matthews Band, or Matt is like a big Dave Matthews Band fanatic. So hope he'll buy that. All right, I'm stopping this now.
You also have to figure out a way to give away the book, the second book.
Oh, yeah. I'll give away the second book on... I'll give away the second book when I drop the podcast. I'll either give it away on Twitter or as part of the post. That's what I'll do. You know what? Here's what we'll do. You and I will take a picture. This is going to be amazing. You and I will take some sort of a picture. Mm-hmm. I will post it with the blog, mm-hmm. With the blog post about this podcast episode, and then whoever can make the best poster out of that with the caption and everything will get the book.
There you go. Perfect. That's it. So well done.
So
you're
that's,
good.
That's
you're good at the internet.
Hey.
That tells me right
I've had some practice at the internet. In the dawn of the day, when the light is alive, if you look at the sun, it will burn. When you're down on your back, get up on your feet. Cause if your body's the bread, your soul is the meat. You can never give up, even when you should. You can never say stop, even when you're no good. Why don't you go for it when your back's to the wall? Go for it, get up after the fall. Your condition's one, your number's one. How much higher?
Now leaving Nerdist.com.
Nancy's love story could have been ripped right out of the pages of one of her own novels.
She was a romance mystery writer who happens to be married to a chef.
But this story didn't end with a happily ever after.
When I stepped into the kitchen, I could see that Chef Brophy was on the ground, and I heard somebody say, call 911.
As writers, we'd written our share of murder mysteries. So when suspicion turned to Dan's wife, Nancy, we weren't that surprised.
The first person they look at would be the spouse.
We understand that's usually the way they do it.
But we began to wonder, had Nancy gotten so wrapped up in her own novels?
There are murders in all of the books.
That she was playing them out in real life? You can listen to Happily Never After, Dan and Nancy, early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.